This is the week ahead. A look at some of the stories that Bloomberg editors are watching for the coming week.
This is Week Ahead editor Greg Miles. In the coming week, the IMF and World Bank hold their spring meetings in Washington. The G20 finance ministers and central bankers will meet to discuss Crimea and other issues. The EU and Iran continue nuclear talks, and President Barack Obama will speak at a summit celebrating the 50th anniversary of the U.S. Civil Rights Act. Today, we focus on Obamacare and U.S. politics. And with me here to talk about that is Mark Silva. He's editor-at-large at Bloomberg News and also editor of the Capital blog at Bloomberg.com, a man with a lot of political hats. Mark, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Well, Mark, let's start with the U.S. Supreme Court this week. The nation's top court struck down limits on the total amount of money donors can give to federal candidates and parties. How is this going to change presidential, Senate, and congressional politics? I mean, especially since we've got, you know, campaigns going on right now where there are a lot of politicians looking for a lot of money.
Well, it has removed the limits on very rich people or people who put a lot of money into some of these campaigns. And while there are still limits on what individuals can receive from donors, the aggregate limit on anyone giving to a group of causes has been removed. And therefore, someone like Sheldon Adelson, the casino magnate in Las Vegas, who has put $90 million of his own money into the last election cycle, now has a lot of new places to put more money in the next cycle. It puts a lot more power in the hands of big donors and a lot of pressure on them as well.
Okay, so this means we may have some more Newt Gingriches, you know, popping up down the road. Now, what hasn't changed, you know, with this ruling?
Well, what has not changed so far is the limit on individual giving. So a federal candidate can accept something in the neighborhood of $2,500 per election cycle from anyone, someone running for the Senate, someone running for president, for instance. Those individual limits remain. However, a lot of people looking at the court ruling believe that the rationale used by the majority, if applied to a case that tests those limits, will eventually remove those as well. And ultimately, much of the control on contributions that we've had since the Watergate era will disappear.
Now, you know, this brings us to the, you know, upcoming Senate and House primaries in April and May in North Carolina and Nebraska, Idaho, and of course in Kentucky, where Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell faces a Tea Party-backed opponent. How are the races shaping up? I mean, are the, you know, when you look at the big picture, are the Republicans on the upswing, the Democrats, or what?
Well, the Republicans have an advantage going into these midterms by virtue of the sheer landscape. Midterm elections draw fewer voters traditionally, a significantly smaller pool of voters. Yet the older voters tend to go out in their normal, you know, numbers, which means that the electorate in November will be older, whiter, more Republican than you saw in the last presidential election. So the turnout will generally favor Republican candidates in November. This means that in several states where Senate Democrats are attempting to defend their seats, they've got a real problem on their hands in driving out turnout to support their candidates.
Now, is this what we're also seeing in the primaries? I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell, Republican Senate Minority Leader, some people say his situation doesn't look quite as serious as it did a month ago against this Tea Party-backed candidate.
Yeah, the threat that appeared to emerge from within the party against McConnell has subsided, most people think. And even his general election contest may be not as contentious as it originally was thought to be. But nevertheless, what he faces in the Republican primary is a measure of what's going on within the party. You know, candidates being or incumbents being deemed not conservative enough by a wing of the party and facing a serious challenge within. Ultimately, Republican leaders worry about those primaries and what kind of candidates they produce, because if someone is so conservative in that primary who wins, he or she becomes less of a good general election candidate for independent and middle ground voters.
And also that also means that even if McConnell wins, that it, maybe he had to tilt his rhetoric so much toward the Tea Party right during the primary, it gives him less flexibility when he gets back to Washington?
Yeah, well, he could come back to Washington as the leader of the Senate, so that's more flexibility.
That's the kind of flexibility you want.
Yeah, if he is reelected, he could be facing a much nicer office suite come January.
Okay, let's talk about perhaps the most political issue of the year and perhaps the past few years. I hate to say it, Obamacare, you know, the program that most Republicans and some Democrats love to hate. And after, you know, starting disastrously last fall, the program has signed up more than 7 million people. Is this going to translate in any way in giving President Barack Obama, I mean, it is called Obamacare, is it going to translate in giving him any more capital to get things done?
It really remains to be seen what happens in the next few months. They had a very successful enrollment drive, as difficult as it was, as botched as it was from the beginning, and those were the president's words. It came in with an estimated 7 million people signing up. And the question is how many of those people actually pay for those policies. There's some suggestion that not, you know, a number won't. Nevertheless, the sign-up has been successful, as tortured as it was. The question that happened over the next few months becomes what people experience with their policies. Are they being treated well? Are they finding access to doctors under these plans? Are they what kind of premiums are they paying? And the experience generally. And if over the next few months the general, you know, talk is that it's a good program for those who have signed up, that's going to work very well to the president's favor.
Now, you know, looking at, you know, beyond President Obama, do the successful signups help at all the Democratic candidates in the House or Senate seeking re-election or should I say re-election this fall who supported Obamacare, or does it kind of tamp down the heat on them?
Well, it certainly makes it makes things easier for Democrats if the program goes well. The Republicans are very heavily counted on using Obamacare against incumbents in the midterm elections, and a lot of the early season advertising that's already been put out there by advocacy groups, and I go back to those big donors, Americans for Prosperity, backed by the Koch brothers, for instance, they've hammered the theme of Obamacare, attempting to use it as a cudgel against Democrats. So if the program evens out and people are happy with it and there's less sort of, you know, public outrage out there, that certainly makes that less of an effective campaign tool, and the Democrats can be a little happier about it. Not that you're going to see a lot of them actually running on Obamacare.
Okay, let's go to our last topic, immigration. Is the pressure increasing on Republicans, at least to pass some form of immigration legislation, however watered down, before the fall election? You know, some Republicans are concerned that President Obama has indicated he may curry favor with Hispanic voters by dialing back deportations.
Yes, the pressure is coming largely from the tech industry, which is really upset with the severe limitations that have been placed on visas for high-tech workers. And in that nothing has passed, they're stuck with the same old numbers, which, in sort of the lottery system that exists, those visas disappear within a week of their issuance. So the pressure is largely coming from the business community, from the tech industry in particular. The trouble is there is still this reluctance on the part of the House leadership to take anything to the floor, because the White House is not likely to accept a very narrow bill, and the Senate already has passed a very comprehensive measure, and a short measure is just not going to go anywhere. And I tend to think that there's going to be a lot of pressure but little action.
Okay, Mark, it just occurred to me that if the Republicans do gain the Senate in this fall's election, does McConnell get to move into the current majority leader's office, you know, held by a Democrat, or does he get a whole new, you know, bigger one?
Oh, no, those suites, those are designated suites, and so the Speaker's office comes with a balcony, a lovely view of the National Mall, and the majority leader has similarly nice digs, and so you get the job, you get the office.
So that means that that McConnell gets a balcony to wave to Boehner, right? You know, from his Speaker's balcony, right, in the Capitol.
Or maybe an outdoor smoking gallery.
Mark, as always, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
Well, that was Mark Silva, editor-at-large at Bloomberg News, and also editor of the Capitol blog at Bloomberg.com. Well, as always, we got to go. You can find the full print version of our Week Ahead on our Bloomberg Terminal on our Top Worldwide page or at NI Space Global Week. Our podcasts, they're also featured on Bloomberg.com and the Radio Plus Bloomberg app. Have a great week.
The Week Ahead. Copyright 2014. Bloomberg LP.